Okay, this is Kali Okuno, co-director of U.S. Human Rights Network. I'm here with J.R. Fleming. J.R. is one of the lead organizers with the Chicago Anti-Eviction Campaign, longtime activist, brother's a founding member of the Atlanta Housing Action Group, which served as the coordinating committee for the Take Back the Land National Movement for several years. And he's also a member of the National Campaign to Restore Housing Rights. So, Jay, I want to get into just straight into some of the recent activities and recent actions that the Chicago Anti-Eviction Campaign has been leading in defense of some of the members of the community. And I understand on Friday, July 29th, there was a defense of Lewis Smeldrin. And several members of the anti-eviction, you know, campaign occupied the house and marched the defense to make sure that she wasn't thrown out of her own home. And five members were arrested and are now dealing with a struggle to not only maintain her ability to stay in the home and that of her family, but mounting their own defense. So could you speak about, you know, just that particular case and the overall struggle and the work that the Chicago Anti-Eviction Campaign has been putting in?
Well, with that particular case, I can be brief because of it's an ongoing legal process. But in particular, you know, these were some decisions that were made ahead of the time. As we are part of the Land Housing Action Group, Take Back the Land, and et cetera, on the Campaign to Restore National Housing Rights. And it's part of our mission statement, right, that we would physically put ourselves in harm's way to help defend the human right to housing for so many Americans who are vulnerable, that we will provide the necessary resources and time that is allowed to support homeowners throughout the legal process and court, as we did not have any faith in the legal system. And if necessary, that we would take back the land, you know, and move folks into these abandoned and foreclosed properties that the banks are taking from everybody. That case in particular, you know, was the last stage of what we said as a campaign we would do, you know, put ourselves out there. It wasn't an attempt to defy law and order. It wasn't an attempt for folks to be arrested. The statement that we've been trying to challenge this system morally, right? Morally challenge the way things are being done in this country. One of the ways to do that would to be actually to try to gain media, right? So a mass part of it is media, and the purpose of that is that when things like this happen, we want the world to see. We want the rest of the country to see. We want more important than anything, the community to see that it is somebody out here willing to fight with them side by side with any means necessary.
All right. So can you just give us a brief update of what's happening? I know it's an ongoing, you know, legal battle, but just want to give some folks an update of where the family currently stands in this legal battle and where the five members stands.
Well, the five members are three of the five members are facing three charges: criminal trespass to property, obstruction on service of process, and then resisting arrest. The other two members are facing likewise charges with an additional resisting arrest, that being Jorge and Chris. They're facing more trumped up charges, so to say.
Okay.
If I could, real quick, the family. This is Tucello saying. The family that was evicted is currently separated right now. The mother is basically shuttling between friends, and the son, who was staying in the home as well, and it was featured in some of the news, is staying with a family member on his father's side of the family. And one of the things that was striking that the mother said after, or sort of picked up on after the eviction, is that in a way similar to some of the attacks we've seen on undocumented immigrants in the country and the way that the immigration process, and ICE raids and what have you have separated families, that in a similar way this eviction has separated the family and caused a lot of tension just within the family. The family is still fighting to get back their home legally, and they're actually going to court on the 12th of August to bring their case back before a judge. And the other part of the equation too is that in the process of evicting the family, the court and the sheriff also evicted a tenant who was in the who was staying in the home and, you know, had a lease and what have you. So all that's sort of been disrupted, but the family's still in the fight and still committed to doing whatever they can legally to try and get back into their home. And then, you know, beyond that, see what might be available to them as options to win back their home.
Okay. Now, if the two of you, Tushan and JL, paint a picture for our audience of housing conditions in Chicago and the Chicago region, really over the past kind of 20 years, to set a context so folks understand, you know, how this is playing out with the destruction of public housing, with the gentrification of many of the neighborhoods in Chicago, how we're coming to this situation where, you know, record numbers of people are facing foreclosure and being pushed out. I think that's a critical piece that, you know, folks should understand, and particularly Chicago kind of being used as one of the pioneer cities and pioneer markets to kind of run this foreclosure and the housing crisis, which is hitting us now. I think that's a critical piece. If y'all can just kind of break some of the down for us, you know, I think to help educate our audience.
This is J.R. Again. You know, since gentrification, a lot of people like to use it, that's the common term in America, gentrification. We tend to use it what it is. It's economic cleansing of valuable land in the city of Chicago right now and which poor people sit on. It's also a huge amount of displacement going on due to the demolition of public housing, due to the foreclosure crisis, right, and due to the high unemployment rate in the city of Chicago. At the same time, we're having all this displacement. You see a lot of vacant properties, abandoned properties, right? In good condition, some in good, some in bad condition. That are, like, are almost screaming. These properties are almost talking now in our city, stating, screaming, "I need somebody. I need somebody in here because this block, this area, this community is going to suffer," right? And we're seeing this, and we're seeing it in volumes now. It's like the other day we were given a tour in Englewood. It's sad, it's sickening to drive through that community, especially for me because a lot of my family live in that community and a lot of them have lived in that community. And trying to remember from the time when I was young to now how it looked at then and what I'm seeing today, it is sickening and it is frightening.
I think on top of that, kind of what JL is pointing to is really what we've seen is a sort of protracted attack on public housing that's been taking place, and particularly starting with Cabrini-Green since the 1970s and the 1980s in terms of looking to displace the folks from there. Sort of a pretty stiff resistance that's been put up from that community in terms of fighting back and as I mentioned, making sure that for at least a decade, two decades, that Cabrini-Green, in spite of being so close to the center of the city and really a stone's throw away from one of the richest areas in Chicago, the Gold Coast, that it remained public housing to serve the needs of people who needed to take advantage of it. And then really since the 90s under the Daley administration, this plan for transformation, which has really taken on a more focused and stiff attack against public housing, not just against Cabrini-Green, but a number of the other public housing developments in the city. And one of the things that the campaign has tried to highlight is that it's not a coincidence that we've seen, this ever-growing foreclosure crisis coming not too long after a series of attacks against public housing, particularly during the 90s and the early 2000s. And as we've seen the privatization of public housing with mixed-income developments and pushing folks from public housing onto Section 8 and what have you, that as our commitment, as the country's commitment to public housing has lessened over time, that there's been increasing speculation in housing, and that attack on public housing is really connected to what we've seen in terms of the securitization of mortgages, the really casino-like activity when it comes to adjustable-rate mortgages, and the consequences of the foreclosure crisis, where in Chicago, as J.R. mentioned, so much, there's been a massive amount of properties that have been lost to foreclosure, that have been boarded up and left vacant. And in a lot of ways, it's impacted tenants, a number of them Section 8 tenants, as much, if not more, than homeowners, where we've seen a serious cut into the amount of affordable housing in the city of Chicago, and really what some groups in the city have termed basically a foreclosure belt along the south and west sides of the city, where other parts of the city have been affected by this crisis, but when it comes to the south side, it comes to the west side, you're talking about blocks that you're going on, like in Englewood and Austin and other neighborhoods, where you'll find five houses, six houses, whole apartment buildings that are boarded up just on one side of the street. And that's had an impact in terms of how easy it is for tenants to find a quality and affordable place to live. Many of them folks who've been kicked out of public housing, and then what the state of those neighborhoods that have already been dealing with historic disinvestment, what they're facing now. And for a lot of the tenants who continue to face this foreclosure crisis, they see that they are living in conditions that are pretty appalling, because you have landlords that don't live in the city or aren't concerned about their property, that just stop, continue to collect the rent or what have you, but, just really take on the slumlord guys and just say, we're not going to have any concern about upkeep of the property, and let it slide into foreclosure regardless of what happens to the tenants, who will basically get bounced from apartment to apartment without any help or assistance.
Now, you mentioned they have declared that there are foreclosure zones. What is that? I mean, what does that constitute? What policies are the city putting in place? Is the city putting in place to alleviate the situation, or what are their plans to kind of deal with these foreclosure zones?
Well, there has been, once again, I'm not a big fan of it, but there has been legislation and ordinances to try to hold the banks accountable. Ordinance introduced by an alderman by the name of Pat Dow, which was signed off by the council, that would fine the banks, anywhere up to $1,000 a day or $1,000 a day per property that is not maintained. There, in that same ordinance, there was a job creation tool, right, that stated that the banks had to hire night watchmen for these properties. But once again, these are laws that are, like the human right to housing, that are not enforced in America. These are laws that are not enforced in the city of Chicago. Because in order to enforce them, you would have to actually, create more resources or extend more resources that the city do not have to monitoring and making sure banks are compliant. So there's no real and real commitment on government end to do anything about this other than pass bills and resolutions that are not enforceable by any means. And because of that, you know, like to say, you know, you got these foreclosure zones, you know, or abandoned property zones. And what are these zones? Where do they sit? They sit in predominantly a lot of communities of color. So some of the things that we have been trying to do to challenge that is basically, you know, take over these properties and do what's morally right. You know, put homeless folks in them, you know. And this is a plus for the banks because you're getting free house sitters, as we call it, or you're getting that free night watch, that constant watch over your property.
And you mentioned, go ahead, Tucson.
Well, I was just going to say, just to give you a couple facts to highlight how serious this sort of foreclosure belt or foreclosure zone is, that, you know, in 2009, 2010, there were actually 12,334 apartment buildings that went into foreclosure, which affected almost 4,000 apartment units. And really, that's been, as I said, concentrated primarily on the south and west sides of the city. Those areas of the city with at least 10% of their available rental units impacted by foreclosure from 2009 to end of 2010, you know, almost entirely situated in those parts of the city, the south and west sides of the city. And those are the areas that we've seen are at the highest risk of foreclosure, and those are the areas that have they've sort of historically been underserved. They've been historically disinvested. Those are the folks in the city who have been most consistently oppressed. And now we see, on top of everything that, you know, folks have to deal with in their everyday situation in terms of the hell that they're catching, that this process of foreclosure and continual displacement is compounded. And as I mentioned, it impacts, you know, affordable housing. It impacts the conditions of the neighborhood as a whole and you know, in their individual living conditions as well.
The displaced. Where, you know, we're in the Chicago metro region, assuming that most folks are staying in the Chicago metro region. Where are they finding themselves? I mean, you know, is it still within the city limits? Are people being pushed out, to the suburbs or to the exurbs? You know, and how is this in, you know, I think all of us looked at the recent census, and the census data which said there's been phenomenal growth over the past 10 years, as they put it, of black folks moving to the suburbs. I think in reality, I think J.R. spoke about it well, that we know, particularly from the experience of displacement from Hurricane Katrina, that most folks were really pushed out into these exurbs where there really are no social services in terms of housing, affordable housing and transportation and Medicare. Is that the same type of phenomenon that's occurring in metropolitan Chicago?
I would say you hit it right on. Folks are being pushed out to the suburb. There was a census done that's saying, you know, like the black population in Chicago is dropping. And it's not that it's dropping. Folks are being pushed out. So where are they ending up? A lot of them with family members. Mm-hmm. A lot of them sleeping in their cars. You know, as the young lady who took over that foreclosed property in Chicago, Martha Big, was, you know, going house to house. But for a lot of folks, they're being displaced almost to the degree of displacement that you saw in Darfur, Sudan, the displacement you saw in Kosovo, right, through ethnic cleansing and things of this nature. They're being pushed out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles of where they originally are from. So you're seeing this flight going to places like Minnesota, Indiana, Wisconsin, Iowa, right? A lot of our folks are being displaced to other states as they were during Katrina down in New Orleans, being pushed to Atlanta, Texas, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama. A lot of our folks are being pushed hundreds of miles of where they are from. You know, and the United Nations will have a problem with that anywhere else on the continent. on the earth, period. They would have a problem with that displacement. And the reason our folks are ending up in these places, because some of these places like Minnesota, Iowa, they have low cost of living, right? And then they also offer the bare minimal approach to human rights. So they're finding themselves finding available resources out of state, right? And it's breaking up families only because this is the only place where they can find housing. This is the only place where they might be able to find minimum health care. This is the only place where they can find minimum support to eat. I mean, we're talking about the right to life, the right to survive. So a lot of folks are finding themselves disconnected from their social network that they were able to survive around, family members, friends that they have known for decades. And they're finding themselves in places where they have to start all over, and their children are exposed to the various dangers that a new community might offer.
And I think the thing that gets overlooked, as J.R. mentioned, is that oftentimes it's looked this the fact that Chicago lost somewhere close to 200,000 black folks between 2000 and 2010, that oftentimes it's looked as, oh, it's a move to the suburbs, or it's a return to the South or what have you. But a lot of this has to do not just with market forces or what the trend seems to be, but policy. And a lot of folks who were displaced through this plan for transformation and the destruction of public housing in Chicago were not really given a choice in terms of whether they were going to stay in the city or not. Mm-hmm. But when they're given their Section 8 voucher, or they're given opportunities in terms of where they can relocate, a lot of it is opportunities that are in Indiana, in Wisconsin, that are out of state. And it's been policy that that's facilitated this displacement.
All right, I want to end just with the two of you breaking down for us and for our audience ways that folks listening might be able to support the work of the Chicago anti-eviction campaign.
I mean, I would say this, as this is, it is the Chicago anti-eviction campaign / take back the land / campaign to restore national housing right / land housing and action group. And I say land housing and action group last because I want people to understand this. In order for us to control the land and the housing, there's going to need to be some action, right? And this action is around taking back the land. You know, as we try to restore national housing, right, from a policy and a legislative perspective, from the grassroots, as we went to the United Nations to seek a remedy, the remedy is going to have to come from the people within. So I would encourage folks in their own communities, right, if you're not in Chicago, wherever you at, to really start to think about what they can be doing better in their community as far as with the foreclosed property, supporting their neighbors. Because we're trying to build a movement. You know, we need folks to support their neighbors. You know, resist the sheriff's department eviction. Help their neighbors going through foreclosure. Organize. I think that's one of the greatest things folks can do to assist us is to organize, begin to organize anti-eviction efforts in their communities, and begin to organize ways they can constructively control these abandoned and foreclosed properties in their communities and supply the housing that is needed by the people they know.
All right, all right. Toussaint, anything to add?
No, I was just going to echo that. I mean, the best support that we could get here in Chicago, which is in its own way has been ground zero for the foreclosure crisis in the country, is really for folks to take on some of this work in their own backyards. And the more that this spreads, the more that we'll, here in Chicago, we'll reap some of the benefit of it as much as folks will in their own backyard. So agree to what people could take up exactly what JR said in terms of reaching out to their neighbors and getting involved and making sure that people stay in their homes and they don't continue to lose not only their neighbors, but really their neighborhoods, to this crisis, and we don't see so much of a violation of human rights that we'll all benefit in the end.
All right, last thing. Go ahead,
This young lady had joined us a few minutes ago. She said she wanted to jump in and say something. This is Martha Biggs.
How you doing, Martha?
Hello, this is Martha Biggs. I just wanted to say a couple of things. I was homeless for a long time, and I just really to say for people to help their community, I say that they need to start helping out their community. And
mm-hmm.
as far as me seeing them helping out their community is fill up all these foreclosed buildings that their kids is walking past every day. If they not full, you know, I'm just saying like it's a danger to the kids. Basically, they have to walk past there to go to school. You know, you don't know, you not knowing who in there, you not knowing what's going on in there. Basically, I just want to say people need to start taking back these foreclosed buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And if it don't happen, you're going to see, not wishing this on nobody, because I don't think it happened before that these kids is getting snatched in these abandoned buildings and stuff like that. Because we lived around one for a long time, me and my kids.
And wrap it up, Kali. I do want people to know this is a movement, man, and we have to get involved as it was the people back in the 30s that pushed Roosevelt to the WPA, as it was the people back in during the Civil Rights Movement that forced this country to stop segregation to a degree. Well, there's a new segregation going on in America and the city of Chicago. And it's the segregation of land and housing from the people. And it's going to take us, the people, we the people, to really push the government to do something about it. And because they say for every action, there's a reaction. So we need to make them react to what we're doing now. And that's taking back control of our community.
All right. I want to thank y'all. Last piece is give us a way for folks to just get in contact with your email, phone number, or website.
ChicagoAntiEviction.org. Chicago Anti-Eviction Campaign on Facebook. 312-287-7228 is anti-eviction call-in, one of the call-in lines. And Toots can give you some more information. TakeBackTheLand.org, et cetera, et cetera. RestoreHousingRights.org, U.S. Human Rights Network, Land Housing Action Group. I would say that folks really need to plug into various networks nationally and locally and really get involved. Because as we said a while ago, like Toots had mentioned about the demolition of public housing, today me, tomorrow you. And we had warned the renters and those who own homes that the government came for us, sooner than later they'll be coming for you.
All right. I want to thank all three of y'all.
All right, thanks, and take care.